Random House parent company Bertelsmann has put a cap on a record year for the global publishing giant with an announcement of eye-popping revenue and profits. And as the proposed merger for Random House and Penguin moves forward, the two publishers will ultimately need to reconcile their ebook policies for libraries. Welcome, everyone, to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Christopher Keneally, and joining me from the offices of Publishers Weekly is senior writer Andrew Albanese for a look at the week's news. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, it's good to have you back. And, you know, it's not exactly surprising news given the context of Random House, but tell us about these numbers, and in particular, put them in some context as far as publishing in the digital age.
Yeah, you know, as you suggest, I think we've known for a long time that ebooks are going to be a pretty profitable venture for publishers, but the numbers are really starting to show just how profitable they're going to be. And in Monday's issue, we're going to be taking a look at the operating margins of the major houses, and notably how digital is helping to boost the bottom line. So as you mentioned, driving this report is news that Random House parent company Bertelsmann put out numbers for a pretty much a record year, announcing that worldwide revenue had risen almost 23%, and the company's profits, its operating margin basically, jumped almost 76%. I mean, those are both astounding figures. Now, you know, what's the key driver there? You and I talk about this book all the time, it seems like, but of course there are more than 70 million copies sold of 50 Shades of Grey and all formats worldwide. That's a phenomenal number, and that'll make anybody's year. Of course, next year is going to be a little different without 50 Shades' massive sales, although it does continue to perform very well. And with, as you mentioned, also the merger with Penguin, which is going to have to be completed. But the random results basically got us a little bit curious, and we wanted to look at the operating margins over the last 3 years. Of all the major publishers. And suffice it to say, those margins from basically 2009 to 2012, when the digital market really kind of dug in, are really quite robust. You know, how robust? You can check out the numbers in Monday's issue, but I'll say this. Although there's costs involved with reaching ebook settlements and other legal fees and all the other kind of stuff that have acted as a drag in the last year or two, the Department of Justice, state attorney generals, etc., the big five trade publishers still posted no worse than an 8.2% margin in 2012. You know, we've always touted publishing as a low margin business. I don't know if tout's the word I would use there, but it's always been pretty much a low margin business. And we're still not blowing the doors off, you know, compared to, say, an Apple or a Google. But I think we might have to adjust our definition of low margin.
Well, indeed. And, you know, with all those potential profits, there's a headache or two for publishers. In Monday's issue, you have a few reminders of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The first of which comes from the way publishers have chosen to deal with libraries on the ebook issue. So in Monday's issue, we have our monthly column about libraries, the P&L sheet. But we have a special contributor in this month's column. It's Douglas County, Colorado librarian Jamie LaRue. LaRue, as our listeners may know, is a revolutionary thinker and the driving force behind his library's decision to pioneer their own ebook system. In Douglas County, they've acquired the technical ability, and they are now working with publishers who will actually sell ebooks to them to, you know, basically manage their own ebook lending. Now, a month ago, our columnist, our regular P&L columnist, Brian Kenny, who's the director of the White Plains Public Library and also a former editorial director at Library Journal, was rather critical of that model. And in Monday's issue, we've decided that LaRue needed equal time. And he's graciously responded, and he's outlining all the reasons why Douglas County has gone this DIY route when it comes to ebook lending. And it's a really fascinating read, and Jamie's a great thinker, and it really will sort of amp up the debate. Now, I should also note that Brian also has a page in Monday's issue in which he's going to discuss the movement among public libraries to embrace makerspaces and how that might transform the notion of public libraries. And finally, we also learned this week that Penguin is going to ease its restrictions on lending ebooks, although very minimally. You'll remember that Penguin pulled its library ebook program in 2011 and replaced it with a pretty restrictive pilot project with 3M, and also now Baker and Taylor. Well, this week, a Penguin spokesperson confirmed that the publisher is no longer going to window its frontlist ebooks. Penguin ebooks had been held back from library lending for the first 6 months of their publication. This is for new titles. They've now decided that they no longer need to do that, and there was no word from Penguin about what they've learned over the last year of the pilot project to make this decision possible, just that they're ready to do it. Still, don't get too excited. As ALA officials have pointed out, with the Penguin Random House merger, there are far more unanswered questions looming out there. Because the two programs, Random House and Penguin, are very, very different when it comes to libraries. Penguin right now is only working through vendors 3M and Baker and Taylor and only offering one-year licenses. Random House sells all of its catalog to libraries, but at much bigger prices. So bigger changes are still to come for Penguin eBooks.
Well, indeed. And with all the eBook news, we would be remiss if we left out litigation, because it usually comes up almost once a week on our show. And you have a report, you broke some news, in fact, regarding a lawsuit by HarperCollins against eBook startup publisher Open Road. What's happening there?
That's right. And, you know, readers can follow that on the PW website. We're going to have more reports in the next week or so. We'll be updating with further developments probably for quite some time, actually. But last week, after more than a year since the case was first filed, we finally got to see each side's case via their motions for summary judgment. So, you know, a little background. As you mentioned, HarperCollins is suing ebook publisher Open Road over their ebook edition of Julie of the Wolves, which is Jean Craighead George's best-selling children's book. The case was filed in late December of 2011 by HarperCollins after George had agreed to publish an ebook edition of the 1973 Newbery Award-winning book with Open Road. But in its suit, HarperCollins argues that its contract, which it signed in 1971 with George, gives HarperCollins the exclusive right to license an electronic edition, albeit only with the permission of George. Open Road counters that no such license exists, and here we are on our way to court. So the case harks back to the 2001 Rosetta Books case, and that's the industry's previous benchmark lawsuit over who owns ebook rights and contracts where digital rights are not specifically granted. You'll recall in that case, a district court and an appeals court ultimately held that where ebook rights are not granted, they belong to the author. So how is this case similar, and how is it different from Rosetta? Well, at the heart of the HarperCollins suit is a disputed contract clause. Specifically, the 1971 contract gave HarperCollins the right to exploit, with the author's permission, uses in, and I'm quoting here, storage and retrieval information systems and or, whether through computer, computer stored, mechanical, or other electronic means now known or hereafter invented. But Open Road says that clause is not a publishing grant at all. It was inserted by George's agent, actually, to cover the use of the work in systems for indexing, classifying, abstracting, and searching for information about books and periodicals. It's actually not about publishing at all. So at the core of this, the court is going to have to decide what that clause means. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell you what this case really obviously is all about. In a word, royalties. It's about money. And to me, personally, this is kind of another silly use of lawyers. I'm speaking not for my esteemed publisher, esteemed publication, Publishers Weekly, but for myself here. I really do think that this is a case of a publisher choosing to battle rather than bargain. And I say that because in the filings, there was quite a bit of background in how the suit came to be filed. It goes like this, basically. Open Road approached George, and offered her a 50% royalty rate to do an ebook edition. And according to the filings, there was some reticence on George's part as to whether she should take the deal. Harper apparently also expressed its desire to do an ebook, but only at a 25% royalty. Bottom line, Harper was not going to budge off its 25% number. Now, George and her representatives were still apparently unsure, and there was a line redacted from the filings that I think is pretty significant. It says, George agreed to the Open Road deal only after Open Road agreed to, and it's blacked out. Chris, I'm going to bet you a dollar that that redacted sentence pertains to an indemnification of some kind. Could be wrong, but I'm guessing that that redacted line suggests that Open Road had agreed to cover the cost of a lawsuit. So, you know, what's my point here? My point that this is really not a case about who owns the digital backlist like Rosetta was, because the clause in question is not even a HarperCollins clause. It's a Curtis Brown clause. So even if Harper wins this suit, it likely doesn't give them a big victory securing their deep backlist ebook rights. But more to the point, it looks like all Harper had to do to avoid this entire court mess was match the 50% royalty. Right now, HarperCollins could be making money with this book, and instead, it is choosing to spend that money on lawyers, and all over the difference between a 25% royalty on ebooks and a 50% royalty on ebooks. And to tie this all up with a bow, given the growing profit margins referenced at the beginning of this podcast, I think the momentum is clearly swinging towards raising the digital royalty rate. Now, again, this is my opinion only, and only based on what I saw in the filing, but I'm kind of shocked at the decision that Harper made to draw a line in the sand over his 25% ebook royalty rate and its decision to litigate rather than negotiate when it really could be making big money with this book right now.
Well, it's some fascinating insights there, Andrew, and really, I think, a window into the thinking at some of the very biggest publishers on just what the ebooks means to their business.
Absolutely. And I think at some point, especially when you look at the operating margins and you see how much money they're making and how much money they're spending on lawyers, at some point you think it's got to dawn on them that they should just be making the money and not spending it on the lawyers.
Well, you know, I'm sure the lawyers wouldn't want to hear that, but probably their authors would like to hear it.
And frankly, I don't really want to hear it either, because covering these cases has been a lot of fun for me. But
well, it's fun to talk with you about them. Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.